kids. 3, 2, 1. Blast off, motherfuckers.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. We've got a fun show lined up later in... fucking hell.
Get the dicks out of your mouth. Sorry, I had to.
I just want to cry today. Oh, I have sorry, to do man. This shit instead. What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Fun show. Jesus fucking Christ.
Oh, my God, man.
Motherfucker, why can't I do What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Fun show lined up today. Later on in the episode, we're going to be chatting with Nicholas Hallin, the developer of Yono and the Celestial Elephants, coming out on Switch and on Steam. It should be out by the time you hear this. But before then, you know how it goes. We got our usual reviews to take care of, and we're kicking off the show with Royal Sefton. Royal, how are you doing today?
I am fantastic. How are you doing?
I made it through the intro.
Yes! Mission accomplished. All right, good show, everybody. We're done.
All right. Final words, Royal.
Yes. Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Anyway, we're going to kick things off. First review to talk about is called N++, developed and published by MetaNet Software, released October 4th on Xbox One. Fucking finally for $14.99. N++ is a fast-paced, momentum-based platform about darting around obstacles, narrowly evading enemies, and collecting gold in a beautiful, minimalist landscape. Royal, what did you think about N++?
It's also about dying. A lot. It is an awesome game. It could be a pretty polarizing game when you first open it up. You'll know if it's for you or not. If you've played N+, of course, you already know what to expect. But if you haven't, and I count myself among those folks, then it might be a pretty wild ride for you, or you might go, oh, shit, what'd I get myself into? So it's about 4,300 levels deep. It is a huge game. And those are not procedurally generated levels. That's all hand-designed stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, basically, for $15, you get a lot of game for your money. It's amazing. But, you know, as you said, it's you know, jumping, dodging, and as I said, dying a lot. So kind of picture Super Meat Boy, if you've played that, or any other sort of like MassoCore or just really difficult platformer, Twitch platformer. This is pretty much the prototypical Twitch platformer. The drawings and designs are very, very spare, very light, kind of has a very old school computer game look to it, like Lode Runner or something. You know, lines, flat colors, and this little ninja who's, you know, you gotta run him up and down hills, you gotta triangle jump off walls, you do wall slides, and gravity will kill you, so you gotta make sure that you land correctly too. I mean, it is a pretty intense experience, and all the while you're dodging things that'll shock you or blow you up, missiles, lasers that are targeting you, and if you stand still for too long, they'll zap you. So it's pretty crazy and a lot of fun.
Even if you don't stand still at all, you will still get fucked up repeatedly.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You betcha. So, you know,
you betcha.
Oh yeah.
Oh, don't so you know? Good. Minnesota. We're going to talk Minnesota.
Hey, can you pause for just 1 sec? I'm so sorry. You may have to edit me out. I've got to find out why my children are yelling at me.
It's all staying.
Okay. It's all staying?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit.
Okay. Go do what you gotta do. Hi, I'm Joe. I'm the host of the SMO podcast. Instead of talking about N++, I'm going to eat a Klondike bar right here. S'mores Klondike bar. It is delicious. What I like to do with a Klondike bar is I like to put them in a bowl, put a little bit of chocolate syrup on them, some sprinkles, and eat those motherfuckers with a spoon.
But the question is, what would you do for a Klondike bar?
I would go to the store and buy them.
That's a fair price.
So, N++.
Yes. Yeah, so anyway, like I was gushing, massive, massive game, really good, really hard, and yes, it will fuck you up whether you're standing still or moving. You know, a moving target might be a longer living target unless you are, of course, like me, running into traps and dying repeatedly. It's great to play with a peanut gallery like my kids. You know, my daughter sitting there, oh, you just have to jump over that. Really? Thank you.
How many new words did you teach your children?
Well, actually, full disclosure, they've probably heard a couple of them before.
Mostly, Daddy, when I'm what's a cocksucker?
Not that one. No.
Well, no, you no, see, no. Honey, when you're older.
No. So instead, I end up doing like my Peter Boyle from Young Frankenstein impression whenever I'm playing a game like this. So if instead of cursing, I'll probably just make very odd grunts of frustration. So I don't.
You do a dance number to put on the rents?
Yeah, I wish it was that, you know, that involved. It may come to that depending on how difficult it gets. I'm still only in like the first couple hundred levels, so it might get to that point. But for now, then A to restart, you know, something to that effect.
You like say you're only in the first couple hundred levels. I don't know if there's a way to actually complete this game. You mentioned there's 4,340 handmade levels in this game. Again, nothing is procedural generation. Nothing is computer built. Like, Mare and Reagan have handcrafted this game.
Dude. And guess what?
Plus, there's a level editor.
Yes, exactly. I was going to say, are you ready? Are you sitting down? Watch this. Yeah, you can make your own levels. So, I mean, it is pretty much like just this toy box of endless MassaCore Twitch platformer fun. It's crazy how complete it is.
How about the music, too? I mean, dude, good Lord.
The music, yeah, there's like 6 hours of it. And this is one of those things where, so when I first installed it, and, you know, there's this loading screen, you hit the A button, and it starts doing this, like, character glitch effect with the word loading, and it was in time with the beat that was playing, but it went on for, like, 3.5 minutes, so I was like, good Lord, I've seen how simple this game is visually, what takes this long to load? And then it crashed. I don't know what my Xbox was doing at the time. but the music was awesome. It's just like, you know, I'm a huge fan of just like a wide spectrum of electronic music, and it, you know, it's like it's all this techno and IDM and kind of Autechre sounding stuff, and it's just so cool. A lot of fun to listen to, and it suits the really spare minimal look of the game well. So yeah, it's great, and the sounds that go with it are brilliant too. You've got, you know, the zaps, the shocks, and the splats. The splats are definitely the thing. Like, either if you fall from a really far distance and you don't wall slide, or you don't hit a ramp at the right angle so that you know, roll down, or not roll down, but, you know, run down real quick when you hit the floor. Or you find a trampoline and you run into it and you hit your head on the ceiling, that'll kill you too. So, you know, it's hilarious all these ways you can die and how wonderful they sound.
Yeah, everything in the game will kill you.
Yes, yes. Take nothing for granted. The only thing that won't kill you is the switch to open the door, but to get there, everything else will. And on your way back, you got to deal with it all again. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. I'm a huge fan of this game already.
And then even cooler is not only does the Xbox version have all of the content of the original PS4 release, it has all of the Ultimate Edition content that was added in there. And then I think when it launched on PS4, I want to say it was $20 brand new. I'm double checking. I'm pretty sure it was 20 brand new. And now it's only 15. So you're getting more content and a cheaper price.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And though I haven't tried it, you can also play it in up to 4-player couch mode. So you can do, there's a co-op mode and there's also a competition mode. So, you know, I haven't had a chance to really try out all 4 players.
Because you like having friends?
Yes, exactly. My daughter's actually pretty good at it. I'm really impressed with how well she's done at so far. But, I would love to see a 4-player game of this. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Honey, where did you learn the word cocksucker?
Damn it.
I learned it from you, Daddy. Oh, yeah, that's right. We covered that all. So, Royal, I got to know, for $15, what is your verdict on N++?
I would definitely say buy it. And there's only one exception to me saying buy it. If you know by looking at it that you're going to not like dying repeatedly, if you don't like a challenge, then it's probably not a buy it. It's a try it. But I am willing to bet you that if you give it a shot, it's a buy it. I mean, I can't gush enough about this game, obviously. I think it's just the shit. So, yeah, totally worth the money. $15, that's crazy. It's like an insta-buy.
Seriously, with that much content, seriously, if you can't find a couple of levels out of 4,300 that you can play, you should probably go back to Call of Duty.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly my thought on that. You know, I have a feeling this is a game I'll probably still be playing like months from now. Just kind of every once in a while, pick it up, get through a few more levels, because it's a kick.
And then cry.
Yes, and then cry. And refrain from teaching my children any other words.
Just cry into your bowl of Klondike bars.
Yes.
Well, Royal, thank you so much for covering this game, and I believe you're going to be joining us on the show later on in the week.
I would love to, yes.
For something possibly related to what we just talked about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, any final words to sum things up?
Massocore.
All right, next up, we're bringing in our good friend Cole Martin to do a couple of games. Cole, how are you doing today?
I'm alive and kicking. How are you?
Live kicking, I guess that's good enough, huh?
Sometimes you just got to take it for what it is.
Stressful weekend, but
yeah,
doing okay, doing the show, so that's taking my mind off things. But you are here to chat about a couple of games today, and we're going to kick things off with Deadbeat Heroes, developed by Deadbeat Productions, published by Square Enix, released October 10th on Xbox One and Steam for $14.99. London superheroes have been vanquished. Only the deadbeat heroes can put an end to the dastardly evildoers and their rotten plans. Not born with their own powers, they are armed with a super gauntlet and the ability to borrow the powers of others. Vie to win the hearts of the public with your amazing daring do while not getting shot, sliced, or lasered. Cole, what did you think of Deadbeat Heroes?
Deadbeat Heroes is incredibly unique and creative, and you've got to give it bonus points for that. It mixes the classic 70s style comic art that you would see with the low poly style that seems to be kind of trending here lately. And it works really well. Like you wouldn't really think to blend those two art styles together, expressly because comic art tends to be very heavily detailed ink, mm-hmm. and low poly is very minimalist. So it's impressive to see how well they did blend the two art styles together for that. It takes place, like you said, in 1970s London. It's an alternative timeline, if you will. There are no superheroes left. They've all been vanquished for whatever reason. And now it's up to your everyday heroes to come in and take care of the villains that are running the city. You play primarily as Felix in the beginning, and he has no superpowers whatsoever, but he does have a power glove, if you will. And this glove allows him. Yeah. the power glove, if you will, allows him to wall run, dash, super punch, He can pick up energy from the goons that he defeats to build up for a super ability, which is during the frames when that super ability is active, he is invincible. So you can't take any damage during that time. It is a classic 3D brawler, if you will. You have the streets of London and it is sectioned off via gates. And there are different rooms that you'll enter. And when you enter the room, the goons will fall down. There are different types of goons. When you start off, you only have like your typical run up to you and punch you kind of goons. Then you will introduce pistol goons who can fire a pistol. And so you want to try to keep your distance from them and get around behind them to attack them. So, or wait till they're reloading. Eventually, you'll even get to where there are goons with machine guns and goons with shotguns and just ball bats that will block your attempts to hit them from head on. You have to confuse them by dashing around behind them, for example. So there's a good mix of goons to take on, but they are a little repetitive in that if you just button mash to jump and dash, you can get past them, punch them, move on to the next room. Each level is graded. It's actually broke down into chapters first, and then each chapter is broke down into a level or a mission. And you have a target grade that you want to reach. So that target grade takes into consideration how you fight those goons in each room. You'll have like a room hit percentage. So you want to see that, you know, more of your attacks hit as opposed to actually missing your target. So you don't really want to button smash, although you can still, I'm a button masher. And I was still knocking out around 60 to 70% hit percentage. So I was doing fairly well in that department despite my button mashing habits.
Beat the shit out of everything.
Because you can. There's furniture in the rooms, and if you hit that furniture and it hits an enemy, it does damage to them. So, and you want to have that hit percentage high, but you can also rack up just giant combos, and that's where my button mashing was doing me favors, because I was just spinning around and running off of walls and climbing up poles and whatever I needed to do to literally just pummel everybody in the room. You get additional bonus points if you leave the room with perfect health, if you didn't take any damage, or if you replay a room and get a higher percentage goal, then you will get a better letter grade at the end. There are usually three or four rooms to each mission, and then you will get your final... There go the dogs. Never fail. You will get your final grade at the end of the rooms. There's a pretty typical layout for each chapter in that it will have three or four levels. And around the second or third level, you will be introduced to a lieutenant. The lieutenant will have the same superpower as the upcoming boss. And you will have to fight that lieutenant. Once you actually destroy that lieutenant, though, you have the ability to pick up... He's on a roll today. You have the ability to pick up that lieutenant's power with your glove and take it for yourself.
So it sounds like a lot of beat-em-up in this game. I'm enjoying the sound of it. I like beat-em-ups. Is there anything that I should be worried about with this?
Yes. The game can get a little repetitive. If you fail a level as part of the chapter, in the beginning you only have Felix and he's your only life. So once his health bar is drained, that's it. You failed that chapter or that mission, and you will have to go back and replay the level before it to get your letter grade goal again, before you can retry the mission that you actually failed on.
Ouch. Do you think that's a glitch, or is that intended? I think
it's pretty intended, because later on, as you unlock, there are four characters in all, three additional characters to Felix. And as you unlock them, they serve as backup lives. You can play as any of them that you prefer initially, but if you get knocked out with that character, you then take on one of the other characters as a backup life. And you can try that mission again without having to go back. But again, even after you've unlocked all four of them, if you fail a mission with all four, you go back to the level before it. So in a way, it's kind of like forced practice, but the loss of progress and the fact that you really are just going through rooms and pummeling people repeatedly, it can feel a little, repetitive and monotonous. But it's really the only major strike against this game. Like, if there was some kind of way to shake that up, as opposed to just, oh, you suck, do it again. Oh, you suck, do it again. And it's worse when it's a boss, because you have to have all the letter grades for a chapter, and then you unlock the boss.
So if you fail, you're
locked out of the boss again.
If they tune that a little bit and made it a little more forgiving if you were to fail, like, that would greatly improve the experience.
Yeah, because it only even felt really problematic when I was trying to play in long stretches, because there is an impressively long story with this game.
As I said, what, like 30-some levels in the game?
Yeah. And so when I was trying to, like, really knock out a big block of it, and that's when I was just like, this is draining. But when I was playing in smaller spurts and I was only taking a couple levels at a time, I didn't mind it as bad.
Gotcha.
But I did get pissed when it was the boss either way, because I was like, no, of course you're going to die at the boss.
You son of a bitch.
Of course I'd die. It's the boss. That's the point. But even still, in later levels, once you really get the hang of this is how you overcome these characters, it wasn't something like I was dying constantly, but I did struggle on a few, and I would go through a life or two. So it's just like, oh, please don't force me to do something. Like, for me, when I get past the difficult part in a game, I just want to be like, I never have to do that again. And then if I get past the difficult part and the next part's more difficult and I have to go back and do the part that I just decided I never have to do again, it's counterproductive.
Oh, man. I noticed that the Steam version has a really cool Twitch integration with it. Is there anything Twitch-related in the Xbox version that you saw?
No, unfortunately not. It's a very simple menu when it comes up. And the menu comes up between every chapter, like, you have to press start all over again between every chapter instead of just walking through the headquarters to go to your next mission. And the only options there are change user, and it does have local co-op, but it's just activated by having another controller that pushes the button. So it's not from the menu or anything. The menu is just basically change your audio or press start or change your character, change your user.
All right.
So there's nothing for Twitch.
If Deadbeat Productions are listening, and I know that everybody listens to my show,
of course.
If you guys are listening, the Twitch streaming integration that you have on the Steam version, I would love to see it in Xbox, because it adds, like, the Twitch chat appears in the news ticker at the bottom of the screen.
Oh, yeah, because on the Xbox version, that news ticker down there, it just shows what you did.
And then
it just shows, like, kick,
even
punch,
cooler, the people in the chat room become the bad guys.
Oh, yeah.
So you'll be beating up your audience.
That's way more interesting than the Xbox version got. I'm a little disappointed.
Well,
I'm not much for streaming, but I would have streamed just to play it like that.
Well, I got to know, for the price, what is your verdict on this?
I give it a recommended try. It. I really do. Like I said, it can get a little frustrating if you're failing a lot like I do. If you're good at games, though, you probably don't have to worry about that. I'm just not good.
If. The big if. I'm going to tackle one real quick. The next game to talk about is called Ninja Showdown, developed by Bitmap Bureau, published by Rising Star Games. It released September 28th on PS4, October 6th on Xbox One for $14.99. It's every ninja for themselves in the ultimate battle for the Jade Katana. Fight alone, team up, or take on friends in brutal arena-based combat where the mighty prevail and the weak pay the ultimate price, death and dishonor. And there will be a lot of both of those in the game, because first off, this game is like brutally difficult to just jump in and get the hang of, and the announcer mocks you when you die.
Oh, no.
It plays pretty much 2D arena brawler. There's three different modes in the game. They have an arcade mode, which is, you know, 1 to 4 players, where enemies will come out of doors and you have to kill them all, move on to the next stage. Rinse and repeat. Each world has 5 levels and then you move on to the next world. I don't know if there's eventual boss battles in the game, because this game has just wrecked my face in every possible way.
So you played like me.
Kind of. But this is like, if an enemy breathes at you the wrong way, you die.
Wow.
You have to, enemies will come out of the door, standard enemies, they'll just walk towards you. You have to slice them with your sword. You could jump around. If you hit them from the back, you get a critical hit. You could throw shuriken at them. You can pick up items to use through the levels. And when you explain it, it doesn't sound that difficult. The problem is, like, if you brush an enemy in any way and your sword hasn't touched them, you'll die. And you will die frequently. If you are standing by a door when an enemy pops out, you die. When you respawn, you know, most games have like a couple of seconds that you know, you're invulnerable to get back into things.
Yeah.
You have like 2 seconds. There have been times where I respawn and I can't even tell where I am yet, and I'm already dead because an enemy walked past me.
Ow.
It is just brutally difficult. As you progress through the game, more enemy types get added. They have the standard grunts in green, and then they have red grunts that come out. And when they, you know, they'll just walk around normally, but when they see you, they charge at you. So you'll have less time to get to them. Of course, you could always attack them from the back and make everything easier. They have blue grunts that are armored from the front. So if you chuck a shuriken at them, it does nothing. If you know, unless you hit them like 5 times, if you slice them with your sword, it doesn't kill them. And you're already close enough to them that they walked into you and killed you. So
wow.
Those guys, you pretty much have to attack from behind. In the second world, they add sumo wrestlers who take minimum 2 hits with your sword to kill. They added flying enemies, which in a game that's already kicking your ass, to throw in flying enemies is just like depressing.
Every character is a boss battle.
It is just brutally difficult. There's no continues in the game. You start with 3 lives. If you complete a level, I want to say in like when you beat it fast enough, it was a quick run or whatever they call it. I believe that is how you earn extra lives, and you will need those extra lives because, again, you are going to die constantly. the one trick that I found that really helped me get fairly far, I don't want to say far into the game because it was still fairly early in the game, but it was the only time I was actually able to beat the default high score of 88,888. And I ended up getting, I want to say close to 200,000, was there is a pile driver mechanic in the game where it's basically jump in the air and do a down attack, and it does a slam into the ground. And I have found that kills pretty much everything. There's a little bit of a cooldown from when you land until when you're able to move and jump again, like maybe a second. So you have to make sure that you time it right. But I found that to basically be the only way to really get through the game in any meaningful fashion, or else you just die. They have a versus mode where it's pretty much, you know, 2 to 4 players, arena brawler, kind of like Smash Brothers, where you just fight each other.
Is that online or just local?
Local only.
Local only. So why do dads think we have friends?
it's a solid party game. I played a bit with my wife. I kicked her ass constantly because, again, everything is a one-hit kill. So all you have to do is attack them, and it's game over. They have, I want to say, 4 different local multiplayer modes in there of, like, coin battle, last ninja standing, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. There's also an endless mode where it's just last as long as you can, kill an enemy, get a point, go as far as you can. Achievement hunters are pretty much only going to focus on arcade mode because that's where all the achievements are. And then you are also not going to get any of them because you're going to die at this game constantly.
So not an easy achievement.
Not at all. Last I checked, more than half of them were at 0%.
Wow.
Yeah.
There was something else I played last week that was like that, and I was really surprised. And now I don't remember what it was.
Yeah.
But it was like nobody had made it past like the second chapter. And I was like, what?
This is just a brutal, brutally difficult game. I think with a party going on, you have the opportunity to get further in the game because you'll have more people there. There's going to be more enemies, of course, but you'll at least have people there who can give you a hand.
Yeah.
But if you're a solo player, unless you are very, very good at like twitchy, fast paced action games, this might be too intimidating for you. It's a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it, but the difficulty in this game is going to scare off most potential buyers, I think, which, yeah, it is a tough, tough game. For $15, I'm going to give it a try it because I really enjoyed it. I hope that Bitmap Bureau will listen to some feedback and maybe tone it down a bit, maybe, you know, make it a little easier to not die in the first
hits before you die.
I had games where I didn't score anything because I just died that quick. You know, that was in my first couple of games, but still, like, it's tough. It's fucking hard. but it's satisfying. Like, when I finally got the hang of it and I went on that decent run to just, you know, get these combos going and getting blood splattered everywhere from slicing all these guys and seeing an actual decent score on the board, it felt good, but I don't think I will ever see the end of this game. It is just that fucking hard.
That's kind of a shame.
It is, because it's a lot of fun. It's just so hard. But at least I know that if I keep dying, that the announcer is going to keep shitting all over me in my dreams and letting me know how dishonorable and terrible I am.
You dishonored your cow.
Oh, anyway, last game that you're here to discuss is called Bulb Boy, developed and published by Bulbware. It released October 6th on Xbox One for $8.99. One gloomy night, Bulb Boy wakes up suddenly from a frightening nightmare to discover that evil has overshadowed the Bulb House. His family's disappeared and there are horrid monsters lurking in the shadows. Gather the courage and use his glass head to save everything he loves. Cole, I know we did the interview with these guys. We did. So, for the people who don't know what Bulb Boy is, what is Bulb Boy?
Bulb Boy is the kind of game that breaks industry standards. It is creative. It is short, but it's to the point. It does not overstay its welcome. As you said, you play as a little hero, and he has a bulb for a head. He lives in the bulb house with his old lamp grandfather who takes care of him, or as it may seem, the bulb boy does all the caretaking of grandpa more often than not. A mysterious evil presence has taken over the home, and it is up to Bulb Boy to figure out what is going on, and players must guide him through the house and not just the house, but also through his memories and other scenarios as well. You do actually leave the Bolt house. I don't want to give any spoilers away, and it is a short story, but you do leave the house, and I'm going to address the elephant in the room. If you didn't listen to the interview, you should. This game involves a lot of poo. And there's no good way to segue into that.
There's poopy.
Lots of it. It's not necessarily toilet humor. It's just that the poo is there.
And it's a monster.
And if you don't go poo, you will die. And if you do go poo, the poo might kill you. It's a pretty impressive battle. Each scene of Bull Boy is its own self-contained puzzle. You don't have to worry about picking items up and not having them in the future. Everything that you use is used in that scene, and it's all pretty laid out, cut and dry, like with the poo battle. you have to turn the water on, but you've got to fix the pipe. And then you've got to turn on the fan and lure the poo to the fan. And it's not anything. You're not actually like picking up a shard of glass and battling the poo with it. It's not action in that way. It's really more of using what Bull Boy has at his disposal to.
I seriously love the fact that you're going through how the game is puzzle wise and how it plays, and you're using the shit battle as the example.
Yeah, well, because it is the one it sticks with you.
And just so people aren't worried, this is only a T-rated game, so it's not like hyper graphic.
It's not even the terrible part is like I found some of the later battles to really be more to my taste, and they were more intriguing and interesting, but I don't want to talk about them because they are massive spoilers. And so it's easy to talk about the poo battle because it's the second one. And so it gives you a little insight into what you expect later on without giving away any massive details as to what has happened. You're not only experiencing the downside of this evil being here, you do get to experience some of Bull Boy's happy memories with his grandfather, and you'll play those out, and there are puzzles with those as well. And you also have a handy-dandy little sidekick that is a moth dog. And he flies around, and there is even one sequence later on where you will control both Bull Boy and the moth dog simultaneously through different parts of a puzzle and have them work together to solve that puzzle and defeat one of the bosses. It plays really well. The controls are pretty dead on. If you listen to the interview, I mentioned the only time I had any trouble was when my batteries died and it just didn't pause the game. And so I didn't know why Bull Boy had skittered off into a corner and I couldn't control him anymore until I looked down like a jackass. But it was delightfully macabre, the game is. It's just everything is so quirky and there's so many really well done Easter eggs. I mentioned before you do leave the house at one point and you are in the sewer and you need to look for a specific plumber. he is hiding amongst the poop. There's the ET game they mentioned. A lot of the achievements are tied to the story, but some of them are missable and they do involve finding those Easter eggs as well. Not the ET one. Unfortunately, which was a good one, because I was tickled when I found that one, because for once I understood a reference in a current video game. there's also an achievement. Typically, a game like this, you'd expect one of those play the game without dying to force you to play it over and over and over until you get really good at it. There isn't an achievement like that in this. This has an achievement for dying every way possible.
Nice.
They want you to fuck it up.
Because they know you're not going to beat it without dying, so why bother?
I mean, I'm sure there are people... There's probably people who could speedrun this and do it really well. I'm not that person. And so I would far rather see a die every horrible way, even though you feel a little guilty because your character is a kid and you're putting them in some pretty gnarly scenarios.
I mean, it's a light bulb, so light bulb, whatever. Kid.
And it's technically, I mean, in the beginning he has the body, but being able to detach from the head from the body and moving about without the body is a big gameplay mechanic. And even in putting his head into other things, in the beginning it's a chandelier, later on there's a spider that you have to fall into the spider and take over the spider with your head. So it's all done in a way that you just enjoy seeing how they're going to force you to play through it next.
Yeah. I know I really enjoyed this game when I covered it on the Switch. I think the only real negative is a lack of replayability, because once you play the game, you've pretty much experienced it. But given the fact it's only $9, I thought it was definitely worth picking up. So I'm asking you, for $9, what is your verdict on Bulb Boy?
I definitely give it a buy. It's like the perfect blend of creepy and cute and macabre. I just really enjoyed it.
Nice. And if people are too lazy to buy it, it has officially been added to the SMLOween prize package.
Woo!
Yeah.
Nice.
So we've got Bulb Boy added. If you haven't gotten the details on this contest yet, make sure to head back to episode 320, 35 minutes in. Listen, get all the info, and enter, because we have over 20 games up for grabs for the winner.
Oh, my. Bulb Boy might not induce any fear pee, but there might be some fear poo. So just fair warning, you might want to stock up on Depends if you do win.
Instead of fear pee, it's happy piddle.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Cole, thank you so much for coming on and chatting games with me. I know you'll be back on again soon. Do you have any final words to sum everything up?
No, I've never got anything fancy to say.
All right, next up, we have two Steam games to talk about, and we're bringing in our good friend Tom Miller. Tom, how are you doing today?
I'm doing just swell today.
Things going good out there?
Yeah, things are going all right. There's a deck being built right outside of my window, so if you hear a saw, that's what's happening.
Would you like to play a game?
Not so much.
Different saw, never mind. So I heard there's more fires out that way. What the fuck are you doing?
Wait, are there? Man, I must have been sending them in my sleep this time, because I don't remember.
Somewhere out that way.
Well, luckily, we're kind of in the rainy season now out here, so it's not nearly as much of an issue as it probably would have been a month or so ago.
Yeah, I saw one of my friends, A Rival, on Facebook say that he DJ'd a wedding 2 days ago at a hotel, and now that hotel is gone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Fire's a fucked up thing, man.
Certainly is.
Shit is crazy. It is up to 54 square miles, and that is the SML fire report, I guess.
Get Smokey involved, only you can stop him. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Only you could stop Smokey the Bear from assaulting people.
Yes.
Anyway, we should probably talk games. First one you're here to talk about today is called Pylon Rogue, developed and published by Quantum Squid Interactive, which is a fantastic company name. Released September 21st on Steam for $14.99. Hordes of enemies and endless play value face varying challenging monsters as you collect items, powerful loot, and adapt your combat strategy in this roguelike action game. Tom, what do you think of Pylon Rogue?
Well, I think it's fun. So like you said, it's a game that has like a combination of like an action RPG. It has like a lot of inspiration from like hack and slash kind of games like Gauntlet, or maybe like a stripped down Diablo kind of thing. And it does it well. It's a fun game. And, for that kind of hack and slash game, like it's really important I think, to just be able to kind of pick it up and play it. And you can absolutely do that. The combat, it feels really good. It has a pretty intuitive system where you can just, you have just like a regular and strong attack. It's all just one button, but different combos do different things and you can use them in different ways. And you really need to know your character's movesets as well, because like, it is not an easy game at all. You need to really kind of plan out your attacks a lot of the time. And if you are careless with it, you'll just get swarmed and die. Which is less than ideal because there's permadeath and then you got to start the game over. So,
oh man,
it's definitely not for the faint of heart in that way.
I know you mentioned it's difficult. We were, fun fact, behind the scenes fact, we were supposed to cover this last week, but when we were about to record, you said that an update for the game hit like the same day. So we put it off. What did the update do? Because I think you mentioned it wasn't as ball breakingly difficult anymore.
Yeah, not quite. It still kicked my ass, but but they did release a balancing patch last week. So if you did play this game like immediately on release and are listening to this now after getting kind of turned off, it might be worth a second look. But they did they turned down the number of enemies that appear in some rooms, and they made health drops and keys a little bit more common, so it becomes a little bit easier to get items and just to survive for a little bit longer. So it's I think it's an improvement for sure. I'm kind of glad we waited because I was kind of gonna give him a hard time about making a game this next to impossible. But now it feels like kind of more of a surmountable challenge, you know. And also just like as I played the game more, like it's kind of a game that you're really not supposed to beat on your first try. You really got to kind of learn your way around and figure out how all the different enemies move and attack and kind of play more defensively. And so I don't know, I'm a fan of that kind of thing personally, even though I still, you know, I'm not all that good at it yet, but like, I want to get better though, as opposed to just feeling like it, like it's a hopeless endeavor, like I did at first. So that's cool.
So I'm checking out some of these screenshots on Steam. Yeah. For the most part, it looks like your standard hack and slash action RPG. But one of the screenshots there looks kind of like a board game or like a map, an overworld with treasure chests. What is this?
So that so there is an overworld to it, and that's kind of where a lot of the procedural parts of the game come into play. So you have each of the worlds has four different levels that you need to complete before you fight the boss. And there are more than four levels per world, so it kind of mixes them up, and it's on that sort of board game, that board game like movement system. So every once in a while, you can run across a treasure chest, or there might be some other. It's really just levels and treasure chests that I found, so it's pretty simple. And then you can one of the kind of nice things is you can go to a shop at any point just by pressing the Y button. So, if you do get money from both chests and as you complete levels, and you can use that to buy health and buy keys and stuff like that in between stages. And that was another thing that changed too. I think at least, they made it so you could get more money and make it possible to buy things a little bit more easily.
Nice. What about the humor in the game? Cause I know the description mentions satire a bit. Is this an entertaining game as well?
Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, they tried to make it kind of tongue-in-cheek. One of the main character classes is called a money den, so like a paladin, except everything is money-related, which I thought was kind of interesting. But it's kind of cool because you can like turn all your enemies into gold and transfer them into money and stuff. And there are some there are some pretty funny items that you can get. One of the items is like a non-GMO, or no, a non-organic orange that you can use. I don't remember what it does, but there are a bunch of those little just like quirky additions to it that that do add some more fun to the game. It's definitely, it doesn't take itself too seriously, which is nice.
Oh god.
Yeah, and it's just really solid. I mean, like, the as far as presentation goes, like I don't know, the levels, like, they kind of feel a little samey sometimes, but they do look really nice, you know. they just, you know, you can tell there was a lot of work putting into making things look detailed and making things flow well in the levels. So I don't know. That's really, I was really happy with the way the game looked for sure.
Nice. I wonder if they have any plans to bring this to console, because I am very interested in this game.
Yeah, I don't know, actually.
I'll have to find out. I'm going to have to bug some people.
Yeah, right now I think it's only on Steam, but...
Yeah, so for $15, what is your verdict on this one?
So my take on it is you need to be ready to die. If you're not looking for something where that is an inevitability, it might be a bit of a turnoff for you. But if you are worth it, or if what am I talking about? You're worth it. if you are okay with that, I think it's a fun game. It's a good example of like a hack and slash kind of game with a little bit of a sense of humor, and it has a bit more like focus on defense and looking at things from a tactical perspective as opposed to just running in guns blazing, you know.
Nice.
It does to me feel a little generic at times, but like I do think it's worth checking out if you're a big fan of that kind of genre of action RPG. And even if you're not, like, if you've ever gotten into like a Gauntlet game or Diablo or anything like that, it's probably worth just keeping an eye on, seeing if it goes on sale. Cause I've definitely had some good times with it.
Nice. I might have to bite the bullet and play a Steam game to give this one a shot. And then the other game you're here to talk about is called Carried Away, developed and published by Huge Calf Studios. They must work out. Released October 4th on Steam Early Access for $8.99. Design and build ski lifts, jumps, and bridges in this physics-based sandbox. Carried Away flips the classic bridge-building genre upside down to create hours of new challenges. Watch with amusement as the fearless skiers put your creations to the test. Tom, what is Carried Away?
So Carried Away is a game that, like, when you send me like the video of it, I kind of immediately knew that I wanted to play it. And it's rare that I have like such an instant like positive reaction to something, but it's a ski lift building, like a ski lift simulation game. And maybe the only example that I've seen of that, like, I know they mentioned like bridge building simulators, but I don't think I've ever like tried to make a ski lift in a video game before, which is kind of cool. And like, you know, winter is on the way, and like the thought of sending virtual skiers plunging to their deaths on my horribly designed ski lift was just like, yes, let's do this shit. But, you know, once I actually got into it and started playing, it's just, honestly, like, it's one of the most inviting games I've played recently. Just, like, everything about the game, like, the graphics and the music, and it just, like, makes you feel at ease when you play it. It just makes it, it's like, hey, come on and build some ski lifts. Yeah. The environments are, like, everything is pretty low poly and, like, simply designed, but it has, like, such a charm to it. And they obviously, like, put a lot of work into making it, still, like, even though it has a simple style to it, it still looks really good. And the music is so chill, too. It has, like, you know, of course, like, I'd be, like, the person to notice if people use chiptune stuff, because that's kind of, like, what I do. But it has, like, this jazz funk kind of, like, a chiptune hybrid going on. And it's just, like, it fits it perfectly. And unfortunately, I couldn't find a place to buy the soundtrack online. I just shot the developers a message about that to see if there was any way to support the artist. But yeah, so first impression, awesome. Excuse me. And so the way it actually plays, it's like it's very much a physics-based puzzle game. So you have... it's split up into like these little bite-sized levels where you gotta build a different chairlift or gondola or, you know, a different type of lift to get everybody up the mountain. And, you know, it starts out pretty straightforward, but like as it goes on, it adds different twists to it. There are different obstacles that you have to build the lift around, or you have like different pieces that have like a different amount of tension they can absorb. So you have to kind of like plan around that so it doesn't collapse. It's all like I don't know. I'm a big fan of those types of like physics based puzzle games, and the fact that you can really solve a lot of the different puzzles in a lot of different ways is always like really cool to me, because like there's always a way to improve, even if it is a pretty simple level. Mm-hmm. And there's always there are always more goals too. Like you have the different levels always have like, you know, stars that you need to have the skiers like enter the path of by building the lift in a certain way, or like you have like a certain budget that you want to get it done within. So like there's always like different ways to, you know, add to the experience. And then let's see. So in addition to like the actual lift building parts of it, there are places where you levels where you take control of the skiers themselves and you can build like ski jumps for them. Which like, it's kind of cool that that variety is there. It does feel a little less fleshed out than a lot of the rest of the game. And you don't really have all that much control over the skiers. You just kind of like, you can make them duck or stand up, but they're kind of just going to go where they're going to go. But, you know, it's only like a quarter of the game. And then the rest of it is like this cool, like physics-based lift building stuff that I love. one thing I would like to mention is that the game is still in early access, and I didn't realize that, but like they're still working really hard on this game, and so they're going to be adding more stages in. I guess they're going to be doing like a monthly update where they add like a whole new mountain to it. So there's going to be a ton of new content if you do get involved with it.
Yeah, I'm looking up here. It says they're planning to be in early access anywhere from 6 to 12 months.
Yeah.
They plan on adding at least doubling the levels during the course of early access from 50 to over 100. Additional themes like summer, night skiing, stuff like that. Mountain bikers, snowboarders, Twitch support, vehicles, tons of stuff it looks like they're planning on adding. So it looks like they have a lot of plans for it. And they said that the price will raise after early access.
Hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, there's already a lot of content there. I mean, I've had a lot of fun with what's already out. And there's also Steam Workshop support. So there's going to be probably a lot of fan stuff that comes up too.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it sounds like a lot of content in there.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I gotta know, for $9 right now in early access, what's your verdict?
Oh, I'd definitely go for it. It's a really enjoyable puzzle game, and it's one of those games that has so much charm and it's so laid back. It's just like a great little like stress reliever game. And over the last couple of weeks, I found myself like coming back to it and just like, yeah, I'm gonna build a few lifts and stuff. And and yeah, so like considering that, you know, it's not even like halfway there yet and it's already really fun, I definitely recommend picking it up if puzzle games are your jam.
Nice, sounds good. Well, Tom, thanks as always for coming on and covering some games for us, and I know you'll be back soon.
Yeah, for sure.
And stop setting fires.
I'll do my best, sir.
All right, moving on. Finally tonight, we're bringing in our good friend Pernell Vaughn. Pernell, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing okay, aside from the burnt lips, but yeah, life is great. How are you doing?
Did you say burnt lips?
Burnt lips. I was playing the saxophone so hard, tearing it up, that I set fire to my own face.
I'm, like, scared to ask what really happened.
Yeah, it's not an egg exploded.
Oh, clearly. So yeah, first game you're here to talk about. I don't know where to go from an egg exploded to game, so we're just going to jump right to it. Your first game to talk about tonight is called Earth Atlantis, developed by Pixel Perfects, published by Head Up Games. This one released October 5th on the Nintendo Switch for $14.99. The great climate shift struck at the end of the 21st century. 96% of the Earth's surface is underwater. Human civilization has fallen. Machines have adopted the shape and form of marine animals. The ocean is full of creature-machine hybrid monsters. You are a hunter, and the new journey begins. Pernell, what is this journey, and why does it sound like this is going to happen, like, next year?
Well, it is going to happen next year. Prepare your anus. basically, this game is, I'll say it's simple, but not necessarily in a bad way. It's actually pretty interesting. I found a fair bit of enjoyment from it. The way it works is, well, the main mode I did was pretty much quest mode because that's where the obsession for me lies. But the idea is that you're a submarine pilot and you are just kind of cast into a vast ocean. An ocean that's kind of blocked off in different areas. And you are tasked with finding a series of different monsters. Big aquatic bullet shooting jerks. And you have to blow their faces off. And then once you've done so, an area will open up for you to continue on your mission to find other aquatic assholes, in which case you can flounder them up, you know, flambe them or, you know, fricassee them, however you want to do it, in order to press on. And again, it's a simple way in which it works. You're basically piloting this ship. You don't have weapons that you can switch between. However, there are power-ups that you can find throughout the adventure, usually located on the mini-map is just a white circle. And when you blow it up, there's like a bubble that you pick up. And if you use it, it will pretty much give you one of the game's multiple sub-weapons. There's an electric beam, which is honestly my favorite one, which just pretty much sends out electrical charges at the enemies around you. There is a torpedo missile, which is sort of like just like a missile that shoots straight outward. And then there's like a homing missile that seeks guys out. And there's a bomb that just kind of bounces off the walls. And as you keep collecting multiples of the same power-up, it gets stronger and stronger. Obviously, if you pick up a different power-up, you will start at level 1 with that power-up, and all the other ones will just kind of fall out of your ship, and if you want to switch back, you have to collect them all again. So, as corny as it may sound, that is literally the entire game. But, again, it's not a bad thing, because there are a fair number of enemy types in the game, between guppy minnows to headbutting square-headed fish to bullet-shooting circle wannabe Pokemon fish, and there's like crustaceans that'll hang on the walls and fire missiles at you, all sorts of cool things. And the visuals in this game, they were the thing that I think drew me the most.
I was going to say, that's what drew me to the game as well, is everything is like pencil sketch drawing.
Yeah, it is a very, very beautiful game. Like, there's no color, but you don't need it, because it goes right along with the art style. And everything, even though there is no color, everything sticks out. You're not going to find just... I will say there's one thing that might mess with you, but you'll get used to it fast enough. And that is that certain areas of the map have, say, like steel grating or steel beams that are just kind of sunken from, you know, of course, the dilapidated civilization. But sometimes you can swim through them, sometimes you can't. And it's not always easy to tell which areas you can swim through and which ones you can't. So you just kind of have to do a little bit of trial and error sometimes to find some of the more secret, you know, more hidden routes. But I wouldn't say they're supposed to be hidden, because at least one of the bosses is behind one set of them. So I wouldn't say that's supposed to be hidden, just an assumption. But
gotcha.
But that aside, though, the quest mode seems to consist of a variety of different enemies, and they get harder and harder each time you find a new boss. And each time you die, the game will respawn you at the starting point, which is pretty much at the top of the ocean. You have to swim your butt back down to the bottom, collect your power-ups, they're going to get boosted up to get ready to actually take on harder foes. And the game keeps track of how many enemies you killed in quest mode in order for you to kind of have an idea of how far along you've gotten. So you can kind of gauge your progress. But it's a pretty cool game. Like, I personally enjoy it. I don't know if I... It's like, again, I guess the $15 is the touchy-go part, but then again, there have been shooters that have consisted as about the same amount for more. So, I would say it's at least a try. It was definitely something I found enjoyable, and I wouldn't say that was something, I mean, honestly, I picked it up. It's one of those cases where I picked it up thinking, yeah, I like the art style, but I don't know, this seems like it's going to be a little simple. The power-ups are just one or none, you know, like I couldn't switch between them. I couldn't level them up and keep the level-ups, you know, things like that. But even with that lack of progression ability as far as your character stats go, I found myself pressing on, wanting to do more. Every time I died, I was like, okay, time to try again. This time will be better. And that, to me, again, I think I said it before on the show, but that's a sign of a good game. If you feel like you want to keep going instead of letting the death be your excuse to turn it off, It's a good go. So,
I agree. I'm probably going to end up buying this one myself just because the visuals of the game have just drawn me in, and I need to play this game.
Yeah, you will not be disappointed in the visuals. Animation is sweet. visually it looks sweet. There's like every once in a while in the background you'll see like animation back there, like say like scaffolding will just be falling into the ocean. Seaweed will be kind of just dangling. It's just a visually impressive title.
Nice. This is one of those games I was like legitimately jealous that I couldn't cover it myself, but I was too busy covering other games, like the next game we're going to talk about, Firefighters Airport Fire Department, developed by Vis Games, published by United Independent Entertainment. This one released September 28th on Xbox One and PS4 for $29.99. Fire can be a friend, but also a merciless foe. Nowhere else is the danger greater than at a modern airport with thousands of travelers and highly flammable kerosene. As a member of the airport fire department, you and your team must extinguish massive aircraft fires and beat a path through the flickering flames. Your team is counting on you. Don't let them down. This is going to be a unique one. This is going to be one of those games that 95% of the world is going to look at it in the store, giggle, and then never care about it again. But
one
it's
of those fun hee-hee-ha-ha giggles or one of those, giggles?
Probably a mix of, like, they'll see it in the store, they'll be like, what the fuck is this? $30? They'll look at screenshots, they'll look, I'll say right up front, if you look on, you know, the Xbox store, PlayStation store, if you look on Steam, because it's been on Steam for quite a while, they're all in, like, the mixed to negative reviews. This is not a very well-received game, but that also allowed me to adjust my expectations going in. And while I can understand where some of these negative reviews are coming from, this is one of those occasions where I want to play devil's advocate.
Ooh.
Because 95% of the world might not care about these games, but we all know that there's that small percentage of people, that niche audience, that is going to see a new Firefighters game come out, and they're going to be excited because they probably enjoy the series. Fun fact, there's already a Firefighters game available on PS4 and somewhat on Xbox One. It is available in Europe on the Xbox One, but not in America.
Huh.
Believe it or not, but the PS4 release got an American release. This is pretty much, it is a simulation game. You are basically living days in the life of an airport firefighter, where you go through a tutorial that gives you, I don't know, nowhere close to the amount of basics that you need to know. That takes way too much time. But once you finally get into it, you start at the bottom. Basically, instead of going to fight any real big fires, they're going to have you drive the perimeter of the airport, checking for holes in the fence, calling in, letting them know that there's holes to repair. Every now and then, your truck will get a call of like, hey, there's reports of a fire in this area of the airport. You got to drive over there, get out a fire extinguisher. And it's usually going to be like a dumpster fire or a trash can fire because you're just starting out. You're not going to get the big shit yet.
You're getting lawyers destroying hard evidence, things like that.
But, you know, you'll go, you'll put out the fire, and you'll just continue on with your day. Your day goes from 6 a.m. to 6 a.m., so you have a full 24-hour shift. That's a shitty job, by the way.
You ain't lying. The pay price sucks.
Like, is it 24 on, 24 off? Do you just, like, what the fuck kind of schedule is that? 24-hour shift. Jesus Christ.
Dead man schedule. Secret revealed, you're actually playing as two people and inhabiting one body.
But once you accomplish a couple of days and you're putting out fires and everything else, a lot of it comes down to how long your days are in the options. You can have a short day, a normal day, or a long day. So it depends on how quick your days are set. But once you get a certain amount of points scored from successfully completing these missions, you'll level up to the next tier of firefighter, and the higher tier that you get and the higher your rank is, the bigger trucks you're going to get. Like when you first start out, you're just driving around like a shitty normal truck. You'll eventually graduate to like a normal fire truck with the hose and all that other stuff. And you'll eventually, you know, in the end, you're going to be driving the big ass monster trucks that can, you know, douse everything. I gotta be fair, it's very monotonous in that you're just gonna keep doing the same thing over and over until you level up to get more impressive vehicles and more impressive fires.
I was actually going to ask, though, like, in the scope of how you describe the game, is this also one of those games where, like, when you don't have a fire to put out, you can kind of drive around and maybe find, like, little secret items on the map or something? Like, like a collect-a-thon sort of setup?
No, there's no collectibles. There is pretty much nothing to do. The goal that you're given in the entry level is to check the fence for holes. So that is your goal. The problem is they're going to keep calling you with fires elsewhere around the airport where you'll be on one side of the airport. You'll get a call of like, hey, there's reports of a fire over on this gate. It's the entire other fucking end of the airport and you have 3 minutes to get there. And if you don't
work,
if you don't make it, it's the end of your shift. You lose points and it starts the next day.
It seems like it didn't really plan very well on how to set up, how to space those missions out, or where to spawn them.
It always seemed to be on the opposite side for me. Very rarely there would be one that is like right next to me that I could take care of really quick. It's just, at least in the earlier stages of this game, there is so much back and forth, fucking around, not doing what you really, I just wanted to check the goddamn fence. That's what I wanted to do. I spent 3 days just wanting to check the fucking fence. And either I would keep getting called the fires. I had the time run out on me once. I had one of the days my truck got wedged between the fence and a building because I thought it was a path I could go down. And apparently no. So I had a timeout there again. And then a third time I was driving across to get to a fire, and I apparently went across a runway, and a plane clipped me and rolled my goddamn truck.
Hey, unexpected dangers. Got to add some action and excitement to this game of searching to check the fence.
Yeah. As I went on and I leveled up and I got to use bigger trucks, there wasn't as much, like, stupid, like, check the fence. It was pretty much hang around, wait until there's a call, go take care of the fire, or go take care of the issue. Sometimes there'll be a false alarm, you'll get there and there's nothing going on, you'll get a little mini point boost. Otherwise, you put out the fire, you go back to base, you refuel the truck, you fill it back up with water if you need to, and you hang out until the next thing happens. You could either, you could go to different buildings and like practice your aiming and jump out of the truck and figure out what all the tools are. It's basically you're fucking around until something new happens that requires your attention and then you take care of it. That's why this is such a niche game, because not everybody is going to be into what this game brings. And I'll say now, there's a lot of problems with this game. First up, the tutorial is way too long. Like, you have to follow the boss around the fire station going from room to room. You go upstairs. He's like, this is my office. Go down here. Oh, this is where we meet in the morning. And he walks so friggin' slow. Like half of your speed he walks.
You might just be worried. I mean, what if if you have issues with walking, if he wants to accommodate you?
He's actually, how Vince McMahon does his whole like arm swinging kind of cock of the walk style march. It's kind of like that, but in slow motion. Another problem comes with the fact that if you're not paying attention to your boss, you could very easily get lost, because I have noticed one character model in this game.
What?
Everybody looks the same. Everybody.
Oh, for the love of Pete.
Yeah. I mean, granted, you're not going to see actual people that frequently, and I wasn't paying attention during the morning meeting. They may have had an additional model or two there, but everything looks the same. Visually, this game is not that impressive at all, but I don't like always jumping on games for the visuals, because it's about the gameplay underneath, and I got used to the visuals after playing it for a few hours. I'm like, whatever, this doesn't look too bad. But if you go from 4s a 7 to this, holy shit, it's a difference.
Poor game. But does it at least have the substance required to get you past the fact that it looks mediocre at best?
For a casual audience, no. It's not really there. For the niche audience that is into these games, if you've played the other games in the series and you enjoy them, you're going to enjoy this one as well. I found myself after a couple of hours getting fairly invested in trying to find these fires, get to them on time, keeping my truck fueled up and filled with water. Like, I was enjoying myself. And that earlier on in the night, I was like, oh my God, this game is so rough. There's so many problems with it. There's so many irritations, even tiny shit. Like, every time you exit your truck and get back in, it resets the view to the inside the truck. I use the far behind chase cam. So every time I get in the truck, I have to hit the view button twice to get back to the camera angle I want.
Yeah, that right there would annoy the tar out of me.
Oh,
I mean, it's a small issue, but it's one that is repetitive.
It's a quality of life thing where, you know, there's no autosave in the game. After every shift, you have to manually save. If something fucks up, like when my truck got stuck, I had to lose and move on to the next day or exit out and restart my day.
Yeesh.
If you have it set to long days, you got to sit it out for the entire day.
Or turn it off and just sobbing your bucket.
Pause it and wait, I guess. I don't know. There are so many tiny quality of life issues that I have with the game that I can't recommend it to a casual gamer. Someone who's just browsing the store looking for something to play. For the $30 this game is asking, casual gamers are just not going to dig it. But people who are into the genre, I think it's worth checking out. If you're a fan of those style of sim games, you're going to know that it's not going to be the most visually impressive game. It's going to be rough around the edges. There's going to be little tweaks and bugs that annoy you. You're going to see vehicles glitch through each other. You're going to see septuplets able to just walk through each other because I guess they're septuplet ghosts. I don't fucking know.
Spooky.
But the bottom line is I was having fun. I was enjoying it. And I can't knock a game that I'm having fun with. So my overall recommendation is a hesitant try it. But the people who enjoy these games, I think they're going to enjoy it.
Sounds about fair to me.
Indeed. So moving on, next game to talk about is called Astro Bears Party. We're going from fires to bears.
Because that makes sense.
Hey, Smokey the Bear, right?
Only you can prevent space fires.
Developed and published by Cubic Games, this one released September 28th on the Switch for $4.99. A competitive party game featuring bears in spacesuits. Astro Bears Party is an easy-to-learn, hard-to-master game about running around a planet, avoiding each other's magical berry ribbons. Yes, that is the official term. Jump and hover over ribbons using a jetpack, perform dashes to threaten your opponents, be the last bear standing. Purnell, were you the last bear standing?
Actually, yes, I was, and I'm unabashedly unashamed of that fact. Suckers. So... Astro Bears Party, a.k.a. game I was ready to just tear apart. This freaking bears and suits. It is $5. There was a lot. There was a, for me, in my mental state, there was a lot riding against this game. I am glad to be wrong. So, best way to outright describe this game, it is a single Mario Party game. Playable by itself. So... I didn't play the single player mode, but I did hear how that was because I had one primary concern and one focus only, which is the multiplayer, which is the party aspect of Bear's Party. Single player mode is about pretty much circling a globe as your bear of choice, and you are trying to collect space fish that are also swimming around the globe while not crashing into your own beam of light, because similar to the game Snake, your tail always follows behind you. It does not disappear. And if you unfortunately crash into it, it's game over, buddy. You're dead man. But the multiplayer aspect forgoes the space fish in favor of human opponents, all choosing a bear that has its own types of stats, including turning ability, as in turning speed, moving speed, jet regeneration, and jet power. Jet what? Jet power. So the idea here is that as you're all walking around on a globe, that's either a small globe, a medium-sized globe, or a large globe, you are trying to trip up the other players with beams of light. If you jump, the beam follows you up and creates a hoop arc, which allows you to make like an aerial obstacle. If you stay on the ground, you create a line obstacle. And when opponents are running across the beams, or you're running across the beams, you can either run under them, jump over them, or use jet fuel to kind of boost over a specific distance, which you will likely have to do because these arenas get crowded fast. And suffice it to say, it's a pretty, again, it's a simple game. I pretty much already described how it works. You're just trying to read your opponents and make sure that they're the ones that crash out before you do. But it's fun. I played it with my friend and his daughter. And his daughter, when she heard that I was going to be doing this game, she practiced all week. And her intent was to beat Mr. Purnell.
She failed to do so.
Oh, no. I love children, but there are no kid gloves with me. If you win, it's because you earned it. If you didn't earn it, that's what it's like in the real world. Sorry to tell you that, but if you practice, maybe you'll do better next time.
So how old was she?
She's only like 4.
Oh my, you asshole.
I am a huge asshole. Side follow-up to that. After we were done Astro Bear's party, we played Puyo Puyo Tetris.
And I fucked her up again.
Oh, I had no choice. She wanted to do team-ups with her dad. I was like, that's not fair. You should play one-on-one. And she's like, no, I want to play with my dad. I was like, that means it'll be 2-1. That's not very fair.
Bitch wants to come at me. I'm going to fuck her up.
Oh, it ended up coming down to bed. I was like, you sure you want to do that? Because I'm telling you, it's wrong. That's cheating. She's like, I want to do it. I started pouting. I was like, all right, whatever. Beat her and her dad. Like, that's what happens when you cheat. Losing feels worse.
Whatever. It's your funeral.
It's the truth. Like, that's hard lessons for Mr. Purnell. If you cheat, if you try hard and you lose, at least you did your best. If you cheat and still get your ass beat, how terrible is that? Couldn't even win with a cheat.
I love that you're just shit-talking a 4-year-old.
And how? And then
she deserved it.
She deserved it. It's not even about me being like, come on, kid, don't do that. You don't cheat like that. I don't want to have to play against 2 people. It's not fun. She was insistent. God. So I had to lay at the smack.
Okay, so you kicked the 4-year-old's ass at Astro Bear's party. Anything else to say about the game?
It's genuinely a good time. I feel like, and the Switch is, in its own way, probably capable of this. If multiple companies put out multiple short games like this, as in like their self-contained games where it's like, here's your purpose, and charge like $250 to $5, you could have like a customizable Mario Party of your own, and you could just switch between the games when you want to play new mini games, essentially. It would be a fun time. And that was exactly how I described this game when we put it down. I was like, you know, if 5 other companies did this with 5 different games, and they each charge $5, I'd probably buy all of them and just have like a weird multiplayer mini game session at my house.
That works. So I guess the main question, $5 for Astro Bear's party, what is your verdict?
If you can have a party, it's worth the pie.
Sounds good. Well, we're going to go from one bear to another, because the next game to talk about is called Bear With Me, Episode 3, developed and published by Exordium Games. This released October 5th on Steam for $4.99. Episode 3 follows Amber's gruff, chain-smoking private investigator sidekick, Ted E. Bear, as he searches for the kidnapped heroine. Ted will investigate clues, solve puzzles, and interrogate a cast of other toys, brought to life in the stylized, hand-drawn, monochromatic metropolis known as Paper City. Will Ted find Amber? Will they find Flint already? Will they take down the Red Man? So many questions. And our friend Jacob Garner wrote in a review with his answers, so let's see what he has to say.
Me.
The final chapter in the point-and-click series Bear With Me has finally arrived, doing its best to wrap up the story in a meaningful way. You may recall that I was pretty enthusiastic about chapters 1 and 2, although I only reviewed the second chapter, and I was excited to see the series come to a close. In the discussions before my review, Joe and I talked about some episodic indie titles that he's enjoyed but were never finished for one reason or another. Thankfully, Bear With Me doesn't fall to that same fate, but that doesn't mean the final chapter isn't without issues. The third chapter finds Amber and Bear separated, and Amber's in trouble as Red's forces are closing in. As standard for point-click adventure games, you need to examine items, talk to various characters, and solve puzzles. The story and characters have been this series' main strengths, and it isn't any different here. The poignant story comes to a close here, and while I'm not spoiling the ending for you, it does a beautiful job examining grief and growing up. The dialogue is witty most of the time, although the pop culture quips uttered by Amber will sometimes make you wonder why a kid her age knows the source material. The puzzles are where the game hits a big snag, and since my review of the Miss Fisher game last time, I get wary when the developer says the latest episode takes twice as long as the last one. With adventure games, that usually means they've thrown in extra puzzles that will take you a while to solve because there's no easy-to-discern answer. The final episode of Bear With Me is a few of these, and I wasted an hour on the puzzle you start the game with. Ooh.
Oh, that's brutal.
Yeah. The solution is in the room with you, but it's not the easiest thing to figure out, and it got to the point where I had to ask on the game's forum for help. Oh shit, Jacob, what the hell? Another puzzle involving multiple keys and turning them in a specific order can easily go on for hours with nothing to guide you as to how things work, and there's no simple reset for the puzzle. Fingers crossed you have an early enough save to go back and try and fix your mistakes, because it looks like they're permanent within the game. Puzzles are a natural part of the point-and-click genre, but when the puzzles can go on for hours without a solution in sight, it's going to turn off gamers and make it so they don't finish the game. Luckily for Bear With Me, the developers and fans are very responsive and helpful with those of us, myself included, who get stuck in the game. As with the other episodes, there are multiple paths to the ending and multiple endings, so there's some decent replay value to this game. Despite the puzzles doing little but pad out the gameplay time, the ending to this story is worth it, and I still recommend giving Bear With Me a spin.
Also, I feel so awful, but the entire time you did that review, I was just waiting to say, he missed a glorious opportunity to say, you interact with various characters. I don't know what is wrong with me. I was like, he didn't say various.
Purnell, you son of a bitch.
I do what I can for assholdom.
Oh, anyway, one final game to talk about tonight, and that is called Hyper Void, developed and published by InFrames Technology. This one released October 9th on Steam for $9.99, previously available on PS4 and Xbox One, where we covered it. Fun fact, Purnell, did you know that when the Xbox One version of Hyper Void was announced, the SML podcast were the ones who revealed the news to the world?
I did not know that.
Yeah.
That is awesome news.
Yeah, they contacted us and were like, hey, it's coming out on this date. And I'm like, wow, am I allowed to tell people? It's like, that's why I contacted you.
That is awesome. So that actually lends itself to my review, actually, too.
And now it's finally on Steam. So punch your way through waves of enemies and bosses as you travel through volatile and crazy wormholes, all rendered in high-quality 3D with a heart-pumping, progressive soundtrack in 29-plus challenging levels. Purnell, how is the PC version of Hyper Void?
Well, first of all, one random thought. You probably already know this, obviously, but for those who are listening, InFrames is composed of, if I'm not mistaken, two people. Like, it's not a big group at all. It's two dudes. And this is probably, I don't think the original version came out this year, but this is probably my favorite indie game that I've played this year. And that speaks volumes. So, this game is a good way to describe it, sort of like Tempest 2000 as far as how the presentation works. You are a ship that is typically going along either a cylindrical corridor or a flat plane, trying to get from one end to the other, usually by way of blowing the tar out of various other robots, which I believe by the scope of the game, you're actually kind of an antivirus running through a computer program, but that's here nor there. Anyway, you have three different guns on your ship. You have a concussion bomb, which is green. You have a pea shooter of sorts, pew pew pew, which is red. And you have a constant laser, which is blue. So between these three different weapons, you have to switch between them on a fly in order to determine the best way to take out various enemies that you come across. They all share the same energy meter, though. So if you blast too much, you'll be stuck dealing with a cooldown period, and you'll be left quite vulnerable to your foes. There's also a dash button, which will allow you to kind of juice around the map, which, to my recollection, I don't think that actually has an energy meter, so you can kind of do that in reckless abandon, but still be careful with it. And the enemy variety in this game gets really absurd. Like, you start with, like, basic pea shooter enemies, like these, like, just flying, like, satellites that kind of fly towards you. And then you eventually start to come across very strange things, like there's like a virus that'll seek you out. And if the virus grabs you, it'll inflict a status ailment on you, such as you can't fire your gun, or you can't stop boosting, or you can't boost, and you have to wait for it to wear off. There's another type of virus that can attack you where it'll grab onto your ship, and if you don't attack it with the right weapon type, it blows you up and insta-kills you. Like, no, like, we're not insta-killing you, but it does damage to you, and it sucks. So, and then there are other obstacles in the game aside from general enemies, such as asteroids that fly in to be blown up, and there are actually, like, these weird, like, white walls where you can't blow them up, but you have to dodge around them. So, there's a lot going on with this game. It's a very fast-paced shooter at that. And in addition to enemy types, there are also two kinds of power-up type items you can find. There's one that has three different effects. It involves invincibility, or weapon recharge, or health recharge. Or one that gives you pretty much all, like, a supercharge, where it, like, lets you fire all three types of weapons simultaneously without wasting energy until it wears off. And there's another hidden item in every other couple maps where if you find it, it unlocks a hidden stage in the game. So if you don't find any of the hidden orbs, you might miss out on maybe a quarter to a two-fifths of the game's content. So you want to seek those orbs out because the levels are fun. The one thing I didn't like about the game is the fact that there are a few bosses in the game, but they repeat like crazy. So you might fight the same boss in this game at least five times, maybe even six. I am not exaggerating that number. So let's just say roughly five to six different bosses, each fought about five times. It's a lot of repetition. Again, the game is still freaking awesome. It's just when you fight the formation of ships for like the fourth time, you're going to be punching the sky going, why the hell are these guys still here? I thought I blew them up. This is stupid. But trust me when I say this game is worth its weight in gold. And the reason why I can say it is because even before this review, I played the PS3 version of the game. And what happened was a friend and I were playing it. We started out sitting down to play the game just to kill some time, just, you know, after dinner or whatever. We played the game all night. We played the entire game in one sitting. And it was worth every goddamn minute. And it has genuine Twitch gameplay. There is a specific level. If you are listening to this show and you want to look it up, it's level 27. Look it up on YouTube. That level took me 3 hours to beat. And I am not ashamed of it. It gives you the weird Twitch face where you don't blink. You kind of squint to look at one spot on the screen. But it is genuinely solid knuckle-grabbing or knuckle-sweating gameplay. Knuckle-clenching gameplay. There's the term. Knuckle-clenching, palm-sweating gameplay. It is worth every goddamn penny. And unlike the console version, the PC version also has a challenge mode.
I was just going to ask about that. PC exclusive challenge mode has three never-ending levels. The longer you survive, the higher you go on the leaderboards. So how high'd you get?
Well, I got the highest score on the two challenges that mattered most to me. So there's three different types of challenges in this game, all relative to gameplay styles that exist in the game proper. There is the infinite enemy waves challenge, which is, as it sounds, constant waves of enemies, different combinations of enemies, in some cases enemy combinations that you don't even see in the normal game that will swarm you. There's another mode, which is basically dodging fences, electro fences, where you kind of have to constantly dodge left and right, and it gets harder and harder in the sense of, like, sometimes they'll spawn late and they'll move, so you have to figure out where it's not going to be by the time you reach it. There's that section, and there's another one. I guess it's kind of funny because the company's called In Frames, right?
Mm-hmm.
So these levels, the level itself in the game is actually called In Frames. And the idea is that you are flying through gates that are linked by like a dotted network, and you can't miss any of the gates. But there are enemies in the environment that are making it really freaking annoying and hard to get to those gates. This is probably my least favorite of the ones, which is why my score probably blew there. But it is a mode, and if you really end up finding yourself liking that aspect of the game, you can do it forever. I won't. But the other two modes are actually really fun. So shoot for high scores. Once you've beaten the main game, if you just happen to want more juice, you can go for it. And one thing I forgot to mention, actually, now I think about it. Every level in the main game has a high score threshold that you should probably try to shoot for. And if you do, you unlock something called Hyper Mode for that stage. And what Hyper Mode is it's a basically a harder version of the level, but what ends up happening is the colors get really like kind of trippy neon-ish. Your ship flies for much, it goes like a lot faster. And your health is up going down to one. So you die in one hit. So it gets to be pretty wild on some of the later stages if you unlock Hyper Mode. And there's a trophy for beating every level on Hyper Mode. So good the fuck luck with that. Cause ain't happening. Ain't happening. But if it does for you, you're a man among men. Nice. I ain't doing it.
So I guess bottom line, $10. What's your verdict?
This game is a piece of shit. I wouldn't buy it. Nah, this game is really awesome. You will not regret spending your money on this title. It deserves all the love and admiration it can get. How much love? I put it on the show today on my other show for the music, because the music is also freaking baller. One guy did it.
Funny enough, I was going to play some more of the Hypervoid soundtrack on the show to go with the game.
There it is. And if you like that track that he's going to play, there's more where that came from.
Track? It's you awesome know I play stuff. Like 3 or 4 songs at a time on the show? Come on.
Don't spoil the people. Come on, man.
Get shit together. Well, we're going to play one, and then we're going to be back with Nicholas Hallen of Neckbolt to talk about his game Yono and the Celestial Elephants, and you're hanging around for that, which is cool.
Oh, baby, I can't wait.
And I say you're hanging around as if we didn't record the interview 2 days ago.
Don't spoil it, man. See, we were time traveling, and now we're not.
Do you want to know another interview that you could check out, though?
Oh?
If you want to jump back all the way back to episode 128 of the SML podcast from October 2015, way back in the day, we talk with Wessam Benassi of InFrames Technology about Hypervoid.
128?
Yep.
Ooh,
back when the show was regularly under 2 hours.
Remember the days? Not anymore, baby.
But yeah, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to play a song, and Pernell and I will be back with Nicholas. Pernell, do you have any final words to wrap this up?
Not so much, though. I guess I can say this episode should come out before then. If you happen to live in the Connecticut area, New Haven to be specific, and you can access a convention called Retro World. I will be doing a panel there this Saturday at 2 p.m. Ooh. I'll be loud and stupid. Come and have fun.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for hanging around. I have an interview to take care of right now. And joining me for this one, welcome back, Pernell. How are you doing?
I'm doing quite nicely on this Sunday. How are you doing, sir?
I am doing good. Are you excited to tag with me on this?
We'll see. We'll see. I mean, we are talking about a game related to one of my favorite animals or creatures. So you be the judge of that statement.
So we are here to talk with Yono and the Celestial Elephants with the creator, Nicholas Hallen. Nick, how are you doing today? Is Nick good or do you prefer Nicholas?
Nick is fine.
Cool.
Let's roll with that. Hi, everybody.
How are you doing today, sir?
I'm great. This is my evening because I'm in Sweden.
How is Sweden this time of year?
Oh, man, it's October, right? So the winter is coming. It really is. Today actually really bright sun, but it's going to get cold, and it's going to get cold quickly. So,
see,
I can genuinely appreciate the fact that you, on the other side of the pond, are just as anxious about winter showing up as the rest of us, because
yeah.
I can't follow people who are like, I can't wait for winter. I love the chill. Like, you're crazy. That's not how this works.
I love winter.
No! Why?
See, I like winter more than summer because if you're cold, get a blanket. You could, you know, get another blanket or a sweater. But if you're hot, there's only so much clothing you could take off before you can't leave the house anymore.
That is my, I agree with that. But I mean, I never said I liked summer either. This is just more like, I want spring and I want fall. I don't want summer and I don't want winter.
Spring and fall exist. It's October. It's supposed to be fall, and it was like nearly 80 degrees. I have no idea what that translates to centigrade.
I think the planet took an actual spirit bomb from like the populace because everyone always clamors for winter and summer and they ignore spring and fall. So the planet was like, so you don't like spring, you don't like fall? Fine. I'll just take them away. See how you feel then. And now we miss it.
I looked it up. It's about 26 or 27 Celsius.
Oh, that's really warm.
Yeah. It's October. What the hell?
I turned my AC on just before starting this interview. It was sweltering in here.
Mine's running now. I mean, come on. Where's the cool weather? Give us, like, I don't know, something manageable. This is ridiculous.
Not a thing.
We need it to, like, the 50s, the 60s, like, 10 to 15 Celsius, something like that. That's what we need right now.
Well, I will say one thing that I do like about winter. I won't deny this fact. You know, during the other parts of the year, if I want to stay inside all day and just play a video game, I feel guilty. Like, I should be out being social, like socializing, or people are judging me for not going outdoors. You should be at the bar. You should be hanging with your friends. Wintertime comes, get out my face. It's cold. I ain't trying to go outside. All my stuff is in here. You want to see me? Come to my house. And it works out so well there. All of a sudden, it makes sense to stay indoors.
It does.
There's no judgment.
See, and that's what I like about winter. You don't have to go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Screw that. Just stay inside. Play video games. And speaking of video games, like we said, Nicholas, you are here to talk about your game Yono and the Celestial Elephants, releasing this week on Nintendo Switch and on Steam. For the people who don't know what this game is, give us the sales pitch.
Okay, let me just start by saying that you play as a little baby elephant.
Which is adorable.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. I usually don't go on much after that sentence. Yes, you play as the little baby elephant. And it's kind of like, some sort of adventure, action adventure thing. I don't really know what genre we're talking about here, but it's a top down thing and it has an overworld with sunshine and happy people. And then it has dungeons with monsters and puzzle challenges.
It reminded me a lot of the game Oceanhorn, which came out recently, but with an elephant.
I know. That's actually pretty, I've been keeping an eye out on Oceanhorn because they seem to have pretty much the exact same sort of influences and inspiration that I have, even to the point where we have the same sort of camera angle in the game.
Well, yeah, for me, like, the isometric 3D style has always been something I've been fond of. Well, shouldn't say always, but it grew on because the first game I played that worked like this, though there was like Solstice way back in the day. But the first one that grabbed me was a game called Landstalker on the Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a same style adventure, action adventure game, isometric 3D. And it provides a perspective that a basic 2D flat game doesn't give. Like, it just doesn't match it as far as exploring goes.
So what made you want to create a game where you play as a baby elephant?
The simple answer is that baby elephants are absolutely adorable.
They are.
There it is.
And many people will back me up on this. I was working. I was playing the Minish Cap, which is a Zelda game on the Game Boy Advance. And I was like, this seems doable to me, right? This is, cause you're playing a lot of video games, like you're playing, like, I don't know, The Witcher 3 or something. You're like, how did they make this happen? How many people were involved to make this happen? But playing something on the Game Boy Advance nowadays is like, I could probably make something like this.
So you just took it upon yourself to do it?
Yes. And then I started out with the assumption that I would have a human character with like hands, you know, a little boy who is walking through a sunny forest or not something. And I kind of grew bored with that. I was like, this seems like a game that I have seen and played before. And it's hard to get a lot of personality into this character. And so I was doodling mostly and drew this little elephant, which had it has a very compact silhouette, if you know what I mean. Like, it doesn't have a lot of long limbs or extremities. It's very inside its own volume.
It's like a walking blue ball.
Yes. and I tried to animate that. And this was in 2D, actually. It was before the game was in 3D. And I did this running animation, which is like a puppy dog who is running and skipping forward with all four legs at the same time, which is like, real elephants do not run like this. Real elephants are way too heavy to actually lift themselves or to skip off the ground with every step. But a tiny little dog will run like this if it's excited. And I kind of merge the movement of the dog with the shape of the elephant. And I was like, this has a lot more appeal and interest than the little boy character that I had in the beginning. You look at it and you're like, you instantly like, why is there an elephant doing these things? And I need to know more.
And then it's more unique. It stands out instead of just another adventure with a young boy and a sword. Right. Now you're an elephant.
Because you play something like Eco or Zelda or I don't even know. Even Banjo-Kazooie has kind of like a dude running around. Okay, Banjo-Kazooie maybe is not a good example because he's a bear. But
no, I think it's a great example because he's a bear, but he's a bear that functions as a human. Like, he does everything a human does.
That's actually a very good point. He's standing upright, he has two arms and two hands, he has a face, and he doesn't really do anything that I couldn't do with my own hands.
Yeah. I mean, he does that weird transformation thing, but that any animal could, anything could do that. It's just slap your fingers. He's a train bear.
He's very much more human than bear in the fact that he doesn't maul campers. He doesn't eat picnic baskets. As far as we know, we've never seen him shit in the woods, and we all know that bears shit in the woods.
He's very private about that. That's what happens in between the loading screens.
It's an E-rated game. You got to keep it clean.
Well, I was just talking to Joe Assey before we started this whole thing, and we were talking. He's like, you know, how much have you played of the game so far? And I was like, I look forward to playing more of it. In fact, the fact that you chose an elephant as the main character is why I'm interested. Like, if you'd chosen, like, a raccoon or some generic animal, like, I don't know, like a dog. I love dogs, but if you chose a dog, I'm like, well, dogs have been done. You know, all these other animals, but you chose a celestial elephant. You went with the pachyderm. Like, you can't beat that. I was interested immediately.
An elephant is such a strange animal, which is something that I've noticed fairly quickly, too. Like, elephants are such an interesting animal because there's nothing else really like them. No other animal has this trunk and the big ears and everything. They're kind of lonely in their genetic family. And they're also, they're really, really big and really, really strong. Like, they can tear trees out of the ground. but they're not dangerous. They're not aggressive. You're not really afraid of elephants. So they have a very strange sort of ambiguity in their, how you perceive them. They're sort of gentle giants as an oxymoron.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Even in the circus, I mean, they'll have people lay down on the ground and have an elephant put their foot on them. And people are just like, oh, it's an elephant. Cool. I mean, clearly there's times where an elephant will get pissed off and do some real damage.
I know. I've been thinking about this, and I was like, if you actually annoy a big elephant male, you're probably not going to come out so that very happy. But
they are very
But you have to provoke it. Yeah, I know. And because of that, I think because they're so strange, they also have a lot of like mythology connected to them. There are actual elephant gods being worshipped in the world today. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of sort of myths and stories, and they have a great potential to appear as a symbol, right? They have a symbolic value, which is useful when you're trying to tell a story.
Indeed. So is that because there's so many elephant gods being recognized in the world today? Is that why you went with a celestial elephant?
Yes. Partly. So I was a long story of this game is that it was in 2D at first. As I said, I was doing this animation in 2D. And at that point, I had this idea that elephants would be a people living in the world, and there would be like an elephant town with other elephants living there. And that grew so big, so fast, with tons of characters. And I was like, there is no way I can actually make this. So I have to rethink how I'm going to approach this project. And that's when I switched to 3D, and I switched to a more focused layout of the world. How do I explain this? So one thing that this game doesn't have is a lot of backtracking and gradually unlocking an open world. And I kind of wanted that. But I also was like, I'm not going to be able to make that now. So I sort of rearranged how I thought about the world and made it more structured. And in doing so, I also realized that the elephant should be one of its kind in order to make the story work. And why would there be an elephant if there aren't any other elephants? And I was like, well, the idea of an elephant god is not strange. Like, you can say the term elephant god and everyone is like, yeah, I get that. Mm-hmm. Like, you get what I say so there could be an elephant that doesn't have parents because it's a divine entity, and that's not difficult to explain.
Like, it's funny that you mentioned that, because honestly, if we were talking right now about like a llama god, like we would think that is such a weird concept. Like,
it's strange.
A llama god. Who would do a llama god? But an elephant god, we just accept that as normal, which.
That makes sense.
Is it possible? I'm sorry. I was thinking. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, because you kind of heard about it before. Like that's something that I'm thinking is very important with creating stuff, which is we talk a lot about innovation and novel ideas in video games, and it's like, yes, you should be innovative, but your new idea, it has to fit in a framework that already exists, because if you look at something that is completely new and foreign to you, you're just going to be like, okay, what am I looking at here? So you have to build your new ideas out of previously existing notions so that the people who watch it can immediately grasp it, because it makes sense based on what they already know. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, but that's what you're saying. Like earlier, maybe the fact that we perceive Elephant God as being something reasonable or feasible is because a lot of people are probably subconsciously thinking about Ganesh when you bring up something like a celestial elephant, I'm like, oh yeah, we've got that. It makes sense.
It's it's familiar in a way, even if it's not every day, it's familiar.
But like, I did like the fact for sure that in addition to him being a baby elephant and a god baby elephant, he also speaks in a rather regal tone. Like, yes, I'm here to save you all. Adventure.
Fuck. Yeah. And it's the most polite elephant I've ever seen.
Like, I know.
Quest, and the guy's like, oh, well, let me reward you for that. He's like, no, that's not necessary. I'm sitting here like, wait, he's offering us money and we're going to turn all of it down?
I know, that is my little joke quest.
That's bullshit. I could get so many different outfits with that money.
I know. So the elephant is kind of like an avatar of pure good. You know, it's like there's nothing evil about the elephant. it's like 100% good force that comes to this universe. And it's like, how would a person like that actually speak and behave? And I was like, well, I mean, he's going to be ridiculously Boy Scout polite to begin with. And he's going to be very sort of self-sacrificing and friendly. And it's almost like a parody. Because he's such an incredibly nice person. And indeed, there's a quest where you help someone find something and they offer you a monetary reward, which is actually like, if you played video games before, that's fairly standard. It's like, yeah, of course I'm going to take some gold for helping you out. And the elephant is like, no, actually, no, thanks. I'm not going to accept your money. And as a player, you would be like, But I want the money. And you notice that the elephant is kind of like a better person than you are as a player.
makes you reconsider the choices that you've made in life.
I know, that's interesting. And that's kind of like, so one of the things that is one of the major influences for this game is a podcast that I've been listening to about philosophy, about mostly ancient Greek philosophy, Aristotle and Plato and Socrates and the whole bunch. And that has influenced the sort of ideas that presented in the theme of the story. And that is why the elephant is such, and he's kind of like, wow, how am I supposed to explain this? But right, okay, so a common theme in philosophy, and especially old philosophy, is that material riches and having a lot of money and be famous and stuff isn't really how you become happy. You know, like a happy person isn't necessarily rich, which is kind of like, we still talk about that today, like money won't buy you happiness. And so this sort of anti-material asceticism is sort of idealized in this game, and the elephant himself is not, does not have any material belongings because he doesn't need to, because Hakuna Matata, right?
Well, I gotta admit though, money may not buy happiness, but if I had enough money to own and care for a baby elephant.
An actual elephant, yes.
Yeah, I'd be very happy. There's no shame in admitting that.
And that's interesting too, because one other thing that you have in this type of game in The Legend of Zelda and Super Metroid or Metroid in general and all sorts of these sort of longer, more puzzly adventures is that you have an inventory. And you progressively acquire new items, which allows you to do new stuff in game and access new areas and stuff. And that's something that kind of got lost around the time I switched to the God version of this game. That the elephant does not have an inventory and doesn't own items. So it's an entire Zelda-like where you don't carry stuff with you, and that sort of refusal to own things is also connected to the theme of the game, which is why there's a quest really early on where the elephant turns down a reward and says, I don't need the money. And yeah, so game mechanics and theme kind of sync up.
That is an amazing concept. I didn't even contemplate it. I mean, I was wondering, like, would there be an inventory system later on? Like, would I start getting new items that I can use to solve puzzles? And then come to find out, it's all wrapped into a specific purpose. Like, I don't know.
There is a point to that, yes.
But you could buy paint jobs for your elephant.
Exactly, you can. And they are cosmetic. So that's another thing. I had this sort of notion that material goods are not an aspect of your fulfillment. And then I was like, but in a video game, you want something small and shiny to drop out of stuff, and then you walk over it and it goes bling, and you get the point, right? That's such a video game thing. And if you don't have that, it's like all the jars and pots would be empty. And mm-hmm. if you defeat an enemy, you would get nothing in reward. And if you find a treasure, there will be nothing. Like, you can't have an explorer game and then no treasure, because...
Then what are you looking for, right?
You have to find something, right? So I ended up actually adding money and adding a cosmetic reward. If you buy money, you can buy different paint jobs in different colors, which don't help you in any way. They don't affect how you play the game. They just look fancy.
Well, I mean...
It's a bit of a compromise.
Well, art and expression, right? I mean...
I know, and that's kind of like... You can maybe squeeze that into the theme as well, that expressing yourself artistically and creatively is actually important. Unlike owning a lot of wealth, creative expression is actually a part of your happiness. So
I have never met you before. But you are awesome. I just want to point that out. That needs to be said.
So I know you mentioned that there's no any kind of like inventory or any kind of progression like that. The only character progression I've seen so far in the game is collecting the orbs that allow you to increase your health. Is there any other kind of character progression in the game? Or is it basically everything that you have at the beginning of the game, they're your tools to complete the game?
Yes, you do actually increase your health bar. That's true. It is true that in the very first room of the game, you can press any button and all the abilities are already doing something, right? But you can also modify. So the trunk, I mean, we have to talk about the elephant in the room. We have to talk about the trunk.
Hi-yo!
Which is the primary tool for solving, overcoming challenges here. And so if you just press your trunk button any time, you will blow a gust of air, because air is always present around you. And you can do that put little spinny fans, or you can blow away leaves or whatever. But you can also find a bucket of water, and you can suck water into your trunk. And now you are charged up with water. So if you use the trunk with water in it, then you're going to spray water on whatever is in front of you. So, for instance, you can put out fires or make things wet, I guess. And so that is a different ability that you gain access to by playing the game. But you don't, like, once you've used up the water you found, then you have to go back and recharge. So you don't carry water with you as some sort of magical ability. It's just, if you find a bucket of water, then you have access to the water ability. And then there are more things you can do with the trunk as you progress through the game, and you get access to more and more of these different things that you can charge up with, but they're not permanent, upgrades that you carry with you.
So basically, if you see a tub of water laying around somewhere, there's a reason it's there.
Yes, absolutely. Every puzzle is specifically designed so that everything you need is nearby.
Gotcha. And what other abilities will you be able to do with the trunk? Are you able to eventually, like, have this badass elephant nose flamethrower?
Yes.
Sweet.
Yes, breathing fire out of your trunk is kind of cool.
It sounds painful, but then I remember he's a celestial elephant.
I know, he's an elephant god, so fair enough. Yeah, for a while, my plan was to do the four elements. So you have water, air, and fire and earth, right? And the earth ability got a bit weird because, like, what would you spray mud out of your trunk, or would you, like, throw a rock or something? and I couldn't really make that make sense. So I ended up with air, water, fire, and you can also grab peanuts because elephant likes peanuts, as we have learned from cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
And you can shoot them as a, what's that called? A blow dart? You can charge up your trunk with peanuts and you can shoot them out like,
like a cannon.
Yeah, like a cannon. Like an air gun.
That's awesome.
Which you've also seen in cartoons. Like, I'm confident there's like a Donald Duck cartoon where like an elephant grabs a bunch of peanuts in his trunk and then go pew 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 pew.
It's just a chain gun.
Yeah,
there's been actually it's funny you said there was definitely not necessarily like Daffy Duck, but a Warner Brothers cartoon where it was like an animal war. Like, it was just the entire episode was like animals in combat, and that was definitely a thing. The elephants could actually like somebody would like be behind the elephant like turning the tail. And then, like, the chunks are shooting peanuts.
I know. So this is what I'm talking about. Again, with the elephant god and with the image of an elephant shooting peanuts out of their trunk, it's like, that's weird if you just drop it in someone's knees. But since you've been watching freaking Warner Brothers cartoons, you know the deal.
It just makes sense. That's clearly what elephants do in the real world, too. You crank their tail and they shoot peanuts out of their
I know, right? So as soon as you see this happening in this game, you're like, oh yeah, I can buy that. That makes sense.
That is authentic. That is very accurate to how the real world is.
Oh, I love it. See, this is why elephants are messy. Pigs! And elephants, they're like the awesome animals to me. They're spectacular. I'll tell you.
Oh, man. So I know that you previously developed a handful of games on Google Play as well as Belladonna on Steam. Is this your first console game?
Yes, it is.
And what kind of differences were there between developing a game for mobile or for Steam compared to working with Nintendo on the Switch?
So the difference is, I actually finished developing this game in December last year. Like, I made the final piece of content in like December.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then now it's October the next year. It's 10 months later. And those 10 months have been basically adding nothing new to the game, just paperwork and negotiations and stuff. I don't even know what we've been doing for the last 10 months. And if I'd put it on Steam only and skipped the whole new Switch release, we could have had it up by like March or something. So it's an additional several months of bureaucracy, basically.
Do you feel, after all this time with release, pretty much right here, do you feel it's been worth it? Because I know over the summer, the first I heard of this game was during the summer Nindie showcase during one of the Nintendo streams they did. And as soon as I saw it, I'm like, holy shit, this game looks awesome. And if it would have just launched direct to Steam, I don't think I ever would have even noticed the game because of how much stuff releases on Steam. Yeah. Do you feel it's the extra time has been worth it?
Yes. Without a single doubt in my mind. It has been excruciating 10 months, but yes, it is absolutely worth it.
I know the game has had a lot of buzz around it since being showed off on that Nindie stream.
Yes.
How has it been for you seeing all of this attention for the game?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I don't know. So my general approach to existing in this world is that most everything that happens is very strange. and when once you're at the point where eating breakfast is just strange, then you can't really go anywhere from there. So I'm like, I don't think this is more strange than anything else. This is not weirder than anything else that has been going on. So I'm like, I'm just kind of accepting whatever happens.
I just honestly, I'm just along for the ride. I want to see where my elephant buddy goes, what he does. Why is that circus girl following him around?
Yes, I know. She's a bit of a mystery.
She's like dancing back and forth, like I jump the rocks, smash your head to them, and like,
see. I've been just all about every time I see a new animal walking around, picking them up, throwing them on my back, and just walking around carrying them.
Absolutely,
animal buddies.
That was I didn't rush to pick it up at first, but I grabbed the turtle. Just walked him all the way to town with me.
Absolutely. Like that was one of the biggest things that happened with the 3D version, which is still like, that was 2 years ago I made that decision, but I'm trying to think back to it. But like in 3D, when you have a 3D model moving around and animated with a skeleton and bones inside, you can fairly easily attach stuff to it, which is how we're usually attaching like shoulder pads and weapons and helmets and stuff to people in video games. And I'm like, I want to attach a chicken to the back of the, like, or a pot, or like a turtle, or later you can pick up like a diving helmet and a bottle ship, and there's all sorts of stuff that you can pick around and carry around. And I was like, yes, this needs to happen.
I only wish that I could pick up a chicken and just keep the chicken forever
for the entire game. Yeah, I know that it's kind of like the gnome achievement in Half-Life.
And by the way, sequel idea, if you make Iono and more celestial elephants, pick it up, animal buddies can be abilities in themselves. Like you have, if you have a chicken on your head,
I know, you can partner with
the chicken, does something.
I know. So you can pick up keys and you can unlock locked door with the keys, which is really great. I think that's one of my favorite things in playing video games, is like walking past a locked door and then finding a key and like, I know where this goes. But because of that, I have to let you lose the item when you walk into a new area, because you would be able to contaminate areas with keys from different places, and you would completely break puzzles by sort of moving keys around all over the world. And like, dang it, that's gonna be a thing. So I have to make you lose the chicken while you're walking. And it's like, that's a bit sad. But on the other hand, you shouldn't get attached to material things. You should live in a transient existence where you don't sort of form attachment to the physical realm. So if you lose your chicken, then you move on.
See, but the chicken's not a physical item. He's a best friend that you have cultivated this relationship with along your long and arduous journey.
That is actually a problem. Like, how do we, if we don't value material goods, how do we value relationship and friendship? And so there's this philosopher from Greek called Epicurus, who is like, you shouldn't be dependent on other things to be happy. You should be able to live happily by yourself. And then it's like, what about friends? And he's like, dang it, what about friends? I do really like my friends. So he has to develop this really elaborate theory about friendship to justify the fact that even if you are completely independent, you still have deep relationships. And that is a genuine problem.
Friendship is a hallucination created by the psychosocial aspects of humanity, and it's, you know, it's never-ending grasp on your soul.
Exactly. Like, this is a question. Did the Buddha, after he was enlightened, have genuine friendship with unenlightened humans? I don't know. I should ask someone, like, could the Buddha, post-enlightenment, have genuine friendship with people? I don't know.
That depends on if his enlightenment resulted in him realizing that connections with others present value. Like,
I don't know.
Possible.
Because, like, one other thing that the Buddha has, he's famous for his compassion, which is a very strong, like, a lot of things that don't make sense in Buddhism can be explained by the fact that the Buddha himself was very compassionate. So he, instead of just going to Nirvana and be fulfilled, he sort of sticks around to teach other people to liberate them. And compassion is a friend thing, right? Like that.
Yeah. Because if enlightenment resulted in you not feeling a need to not necessarily be attached to people, but to not even be concerned about the welfare of others because it's, you know, non-tangible in the grander scheme of things, why waste your time teaching other people to do it where you're already set?
I know, right? So this is worth thinking about. What's the difference between friends and wealth?
It could just be the aspect of giving to others and helping others, but not necessarily growing attached to those others, so that when you help them and then they go on about their business to live their life, you don't feel a loss, sense of loss in them leaving. You feel a sense of accomplishment by helping.
Yeah, yeah. I know.
This interview is awesome, man.
I don't know if this is going.
This started with a game about the elephant.
Now we're just talking about like our soul and how the fulfillment of friendship. Although I know what the difference is between wealth and friendship. Wealth will let you buy a Nintendo Switch. Friendship won't.
No.
Friendship will let you mooch off of another friend.
I know. It will let you borrow one.
Yes.
Unless they're too busy playing Yono and the Celestial Elephants.
That is true.
So speaking of playing the game on a Switch, you mentioned the game was done in December, which was months before the Switch released.
I know.
What made you go with Nintendo for this game as opposed to Xbox or PlayStation?
Yeah, I know. If you look at my sort of list of influences of what other games that I've been playing while I've been working on this, basically all Nintendo games, right? Both for the gameplay, but also like I play Mario Kart. I played an old Mario Kart for like GameCube or something, and I will like deliberately drive off the road to look at the 3D polygons in a tree or something, or in a bush or a rock, or Mario Galaxy, right? And so graphically and gameplay wise, it is such a Nintendo game. And in the beginning was like, it's a shame I can't release this on a Nintendo platform, because it's gonna be a bit weird to have this Nintendo game on a PC. And then last fall, about a year ago, people at Nintendo saw this online, a GIF or a video or something, and they were like, "Huh, this looks like a Nintendo game. We should get in touch with this guy."
Oh wow!
Oh nice.
And, you out.
So I got this email from Nintendo, and they were like, "Hi, could we like sell your game on our platform?" And I was like, "Yes, yes." How
do
we make this happen?
Do you have absolutely? To ask?
And that was before the Switch was even released or announced. So we were talking about like the Wii U or something. And I was like, okay, I don't really have a Wii U or don't know what that is, but we will talk about that. And then they dropped their first sort of Switch reveal, and I was like, holy shit, this is hilarious. Let's do this.
I just think that's an awesome concept when you think about it. You stated yourself that a lot of your influence in games, both in enjoyment and in design, came from Nintendo platforms. Yes. Exactly. And then they found you, not the other way around. You weren't like saying, "I have to get this on a Nintendo system." It was more like, "Hey, guy, we think that your product embodies that which you yourself have taken a fond appreciation of. Yes. Come on in."
Like, yeah, it's incredible. I mean, that is something that I would think is weird if I thought things were weird.
But in the world of Yono, it's perfectly normal.
Yeah, I know. It is absolutely incredible. And then I started working together with a publisher to facilitate this. And they were like, "So do you want to do like Xbox and PlayStation?" I was like, "You know what? Not really. I mean, I got what I wanted here."
You're upset.
I was actually going to ask if there's a chance that we'll see it come to other platforms, because people who listen to the show know that we're Xbox fans on the show, or at least I am. And I know personally I'd love to see it come to other platforms, but it just feels right being on Nintendo.
I know. That's true. I mean, that's kind of what I'm thinking as well. Like, for one thing, so I am primarily an artist and a storyteller, and I'm not really a programmer. I'm kind of just faking it. This is my biggest project by far, and I kind of learned to code well while working on this, and porting it to consoles is like, oh my god, I'm not gonna be able to do that. Like, I have no idea where to even begin with a technical challenge like that. So I'm not looking forward to porting it to Xbox and PlayStation. And I wasn't looking forward to porting to the Switch either, but like, the Switch is such a big deal for me that I'm willing to overcome
that. Actually, I'm kind of curious about this. This might be one of the most obvious answers, but worth asking. So, you didn't have much experience, like you said, with the actual coding to console aspect, but you knew you had a product that worked, and Nintendo wanted to have your product. Was there a situation at any point where they actually, like, openly offered assistance? Or was it just a matter of, if you can do it, we can take it, and if you can't, you're on your own?
Nintendo themselves are swamped. Like, there are so many games that want to be on the Switch. So they are like, we will help you out if we can, but we're kind of busy. but they did, as I said, I hooked up with a publisher, a French publisher called Plugin. And they were like, okay, we'll try and help you out with this. We'll find you some like a chat group where you can sort of post questions if you run into something. So they'd be kind of helping me out with that.
That's really cool, actually.
Yeah. Cause they were like, we could outsource this and give another programmer the task of doing the port, but that will take several months because they don't know anything about the project. They will basically have to go through all your code and try to make sense of it. So it's actually easier for you to just learn this and do it yourself. That would be quicker than to let someone else handle the project. And I was like, okay. So then I started sort of chatting with programmer friends and getting help in just the specific things I needed.
Mm-hmm. Hey, it worked, I guess.
Yeah, it
you
did
know switch you.
The difficult thing is getting save files to work because the Switch has a different architecture than computers, so save files would have to be done in a different way. And I'm like, yes, okay, that's like the one difficult thing, and we eventually sorted it out.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's really, really cool. I'm really enjoying the game myself. I'm very excited to play more of it. How does it feel that it's finally here? Are you excited to see everybody finally get their hands on your game?
I don't know. I try not to think about that too much. Like, one of the most difficult things I know is watching a YouTube playthrough, especially one with commentary of a game that you made yourself, because you're sitting there and there's nothing you can do, especially if it isn't live, it's recorded and uploaded, and you're like, you should go to the left here, and you're not doing it, and I'm like, oh my god. And you know, what if something breaks? You know, you're walking awfully close to that ledge, and what if you fall off and you don't respawn properly? That would suck. And it's torture to watch people play your game. I mean, it's bad enough to have playtesting when you're sitting right next to them, but like watching someone on the other side of the world recording it, like, oh my god. So I'm kind of nervous, but I think that most reviews and opinions will be pretty positive. Actually, I don't think people are gonna dislike the game very hard.
I think it helps heavily that, I mean, I feel like they may be becoming more common nowadays, but I think that you're doing a blue sky style of game is gonna ultimately influence the type of people that are also going to be playing your game, which means I feel like you may be less likely to come across sticklers, I'll call it.
Yeah, like, that's true.
You're too busy enjoying yourself and kind of taking in the world itself to really poke at it. Like, say, for example, let's say you do fall off the side and the respawn doesn't work quite as expected. The person's probably going to go, okay, that sucks, but I'll just load up the old save or I'll figure it out. Not a big deal.
Yeah.
So I think even if that does occur, you'll probably be in good shape as far as the response to it.
I know, I think so as well. We're probably going to start seeing more reviews and stuff going up this week, and I don't know, it's going to be weird for me.
Are you nervous about it?
Yes, I am. I might sort of ask my friends to sort of proofread all reviews before I read them, because like I need to protect my emotional state. So they're like, this is safe for you to read emotionally, and then I can read it.
They just come to you with a list, like, you could check out these. I wouldn't look at these, though.
Exactly, exactly. Right.
Actually, you don't even want them to tell you not look at these, because then curiosity is going to strike. You know,
I
being
know.
Told not to do something, you're obviously going to do it.
I know.
These guys were mean. They're like insulting your family and everything. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I think it got personal.
Yeah, I know. I mean, who knows what could happen?
I can tell you right now. I mean, obviously, we haven't reviewed it yet because both Joe and I are still playing it. Yeah. But from where I'm standing right now, so far, the smiles are plentiful. So yeah. I'm thinking good times.
Yeah, it is a likable game. It is approachable because it's kind of sunshiny and kind of adorable and not very off-putting, I guess. I mean, there are many games that are deliberately trying to be off-putting, like horror games and weird sort of Mortal Kombat-style brutal fighting games. And it's like, that's pretty cool. I can enjoy that. But if you don't do that right, if you do something that is just disgusting and not fun to play, then that's going to be just disgusting. Whereas this game is like, it's friendly. So it wants to be liked.
Well, with such a pleasant and sophisticated demeanor as Yodo has, I don't think that'll be a challenging thing to do.
Very true.
No, I hope not.
Like, what are you doing here? I just came to have a nice conversation with you. Possibly some peanuts.
while wearing a chicken.
He's my friend. His name is Charles the Chicken, and we're best friends forever.
Cluck, cluck.
So I know we've been chatting for a while. I don't want to take up all of your day. Is there anything that we didn't get to talk about yet that you want to talk about with the game?
I don't really know. I honestly don't really remember what we've been saying.
Me neither.
We talked about Yono and the fact that he's a celestial elephant.
Indeed. I think we mentioned that once or twice.
One thing that kind of got a bit out of hand during development is how much written text there is in the game. Like, there's all these people in every city that has a lot of things to say and a lot of texts to read, and that might be a bit surprising if you think of this as a kind of like a sunshiny adventure game where you just jump around and solve puzzles all the time. Like, it's almost like a role-playing game. It's almost like an RPG in the way it's written, which might surprise people just from looking at the screenshots. But, I mean, if you ask, like, it's good. It's one, like, the writing is not bad. It's good writing. So it's that's part of the game. And as we've been talking a lot now about like philosophy and what friendship means and what happiness means, and this game has a sort of a philosophical backbone to it. So it's very friendly on the surface. It has cute elephant and it has green grass and sunny meadows, but it also has a bit of like an intellectual punch to it, which I hope people will pick up on.
I think it's good when games out there are more than just, you know, an action game or just gameplay where they have, you know, a story and there's like a moral and meaning behind the game.
Yeah, I think so too. Those are the ones that you remember after you, like, there are games that are fun to play while you're playing them, and then there are other games that are like not necessarily fun to play while you're playing them, but you like them because of what they mean the rest of the time. If that makes any sense.
It does. Like I agree.
Most, especially like old RPGs where you like have a top-down camera angle and you have turn-based combat and shit, it's kind of tedious to sit and upgrade all your charisma stats and click through every combat scenario. But they're still good games because of how you engage with them over a long period of time.
Sounds good. Well, again, the game is called Yono and the Celestial Elephants. By the time this episode is out, it should be available on Nintendo Switch and on Steam for $14.99. Yeah. Nick, it's been fantastic having you on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This was pretty cool.
Yeah, this was a spectacular conversation.
So, do you have any final plugs that you want to give? Where can people keep up to date with you?
Wow. I have a Twitter account, I guess, is my most reliable, channel. Okay, so my name is, Niklas Hallin. And I've written it with my surname first. So it's at, HallinNiklas. Wow, that was a mouthful. Which is my Twitter handle. And that's where I am most active.
Sounds good. Pernell, thank you as well for tagging in on this one and hanging out. Niklas, again, it was a pleasure having you on the show. Do you have any final words to end the episode?
Buy my game!